track here, but how just when we talk about, you know, Larry mentioned the fact that, you know, wait a minute, this is a little different, a little uncomfortable, or why me? And how are we going to get all this to come together because we're not used to doing this? And, you know, these folks picked all of these wonderful songs that actually go with the sermon. We did not coordinate this, believe it or not. Obviously, I did not talk to most of you about where you saw God, what your concerns are. But amazingly, it all goes into these scriptures. What a cool thing to see God working and just to manipulate all these things. So we'll see if we pull it off in that same way. I'm pretty certain we will. So, Chris, if you would put up this first scripture. We're talking about leading by following. And that may sound a little bit like a paradox. In some ways it is, especially in our modern culture. But in Luke, we go back, and I know most people have probably seen this, but I think it's quite interesting going into this. A dispute also arose among them, the disciples, as to which of them was considered to be the greatest. Jesus said to them, "The kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who exercise authority over them call themselves benefactors. But you are not to be like that. Instead, the greatest among you should be like the youngest, and the one who rules like the one who serves." Is that a little bit contrary to what we think of as far as leadership in today's world? I mean, we tend to want to build ourselves up. I mean, it's the great American dream, right? Work yourself up. Hey, eventually, maybe you're the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, or you're going to be the boss someday, or whatever the case might be. That's what we seek. But Jesus actually tells us something very different. That part of it, although it might be a momentary gratification, is not really where we're going to find his fulfillment. That's the opportunity to serve. And isn't it interesting, and maybe some of you have experienced this, you know, when you have that boss or you're working with someone who actually has such a servant attitude about things, you're like, wow, we can truly get things done because I don't feel like somebody is lording things. I've been blessed with that for the last few years, that I've had someone who is there to support me, but they just let me do what they believe I can do. So I have found over the years, just even from career standpoint, And I've made this comment to a few people, and they always raise their eyebrows, is that leadership should be an incredibly humbling thing. That if it's not humbling to you, then you probably aren't doing it right. So leave that in the back of your head for a moment. I guess maybe the next question would be that I would ask is, why is a servant leader so effective? Any thoughts? Again, this can be very interactive, so I might as well leave the mic out here because there's no way I'm going to beat Dave's record if I do it all by myself. Again, I'm kidding. It's just okay. So why do you think that a servant leader is more effective? Any thoughts? Sorry, I'm going to put this in front. Yeah, I got it on for you. Remember, there are some folks that will actually listen to these online, so that's why we put the microphone out there so that they can actually hear those questions and that interaction. And so Chris can hear as well.
I just think it kind of empowers the person that's doing the job, and it gives them the confidence to go forward and continue to do it because they're being supported. And then somebody's putting their confidence in them.
Right. You said two key words right there, empowerment and confidence. And I can tell you that even at our own company, Steve can vouch for this too, we've probably spent, I wouldn't even dare to guess how much money, on trying to get that across to employees. Empowerment and confidence. Right, we come up with an entire program for it. But businesses have finally actually realized that actually this idea of servant leadership is more effective. You get more out of your employees. You do things. So what about in the sense of you know, we're not a business, but we're a church, we're a congregation. So how do those things come into play here? We'll talk about that just a little bit more. So this is where I'm going to need some help. And this is where we're going to get into the whole, how do we do that as a congregation? The idea of teamwork. Okay, we can have an effective leader. We can have, and actually, wait a minute, before I get to that, I almost forgot. Would you go ahead and key up that video? I'm talking, in the last couple of springs, I go to Las Vegas, and I'm a soccer coach. And there's a big gathering of coaches from all across the Western United States that go get together and try to figure out how do we teach kids in a positive way, in a way, just you were mentioning earlier, that empowers them, gives them confidence and so on, and learn some of these techniques. Because quite frankly, especially my age group, we're still struggling to break the bad habits of the past. We're still struggling with this idea of what some of these things mean, and so to see this kind of thing is quite cool. So I showed it to my coaches. Right now in this organization, I'm an administrator. I've got about 40 coaches that I coordinate and support and so on. And the idea that, hey, you know what, we can be a great organization if we're all committed to doing something. So I don't know if I was the shirtless dancing guy. In some ways, I probably was a little bit. But we kind of have that here too, right? We've been through lots of ups and downs as a congregation. Personally, we've been up through ups and downs. So who is your dancing shirtless guy that is doing something great? Now, that was the key word in here, right? There's lots of dancing shirtless guys out there. Some of them are just downright crazy. Some of them are doing something great. Some of them are actually in that mode, or they found that place, or God is actually taking leadership of them. They are truly following God, and those are the folks that we're trying to look out for. And that's where we identify what it is that we want to follow and how we want to be. And again, we'll go back to that as a congregation. What kind of congregation do we want to be? Do we want to be active? Do we want to make a movement and be people then that other folks would like to follow? So it's going to take teamwork to do that. Not one person. What would have happened if the dancing shirtless guy didn't get a follower? He's just been a dancing shirtless guy, right? Just been somebody else, not so sure about you. And it was that follower that came in, just like they mentioned. That was the critical piece. But not even just that first one. And I love the way you mentioned empowerment, because he went to that individual and actually acknowledged them. Right? Gave them confidence, which as soon as he did that, other people got confidence. Like, hey, I'm not going to get made fun of by these guys, at least if I go out there and dance crazy with them. So it was this entire thing of being equal with one another and being a team, even if that first team is only three or four, because eventually other people start to buy into it. They start to buy into that idea that, you know what, hey, that looks pretty darn fun. Let's go join in. And I ended up, I was thinking of this as I was watching the video. I saw this one time. It was actually Tyler had a Lego competition. And I remember they got on stage, and some of them were starting to dance kind of in an intermission period. And next thing you know, I look back, and there's like all of them are going up there. And it was because there was a few brave ones that made the move. And then after a while, it's like, hey, they are too cool for us to sit back here, right? And so it's too much fun to not be a part of. So here's where I need help. Let's talk about some teamwork. Will somebody do me a favor and go to Ecclesiastes chapter 4? We're going to look at verses 9 through 12. And then 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 20 to 25. Any volunteers if whoever gets there? Anybody have it? First Corinthians. Anybody have Ecclesiastes? Okay, well, we'll give you another. Go ahead and we do the First Corinthians verse first.
First Corinthians 12, 20 through 25.
As it is, there are many parts, but one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you. And the head cannot say to the feet, I don't need you. On the contrary, these parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And the parts that we think are less honorable, we treat with special honor. And the parts that are unpresentable are treated with special modesty. While our presentable parts need no special treatment. But God has combined the members of the body and has given greater honor to the parts that lacked it, so that there should be no division in the body, but that its parts should have equal concern for each other.
Thanks, Wayne.
Okay, Ecclesiastes. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken.
Thanks. So just from those two verses, do you think that God designed us to worship alone? I mean, that's pretty clear cut, right? I mean, and we feel that. We feel that. I mean, loneliness is something that it hurts. Whether it's at the personal level or, again, even something where we're doing things as a group, if you don't feel like you're part of that group, then that goes into exactly what Janelle just read in 1 Corinthians. That all of a sudden it's like, well, I'm kind of that part that's not as important as the rest of the parts, and so on and so forth. And so, again, I will relate a lot of this back to my experience coaching, because I've seen it at different levels of how interesting it is to see, especially kids, when they haven't gone through maybe the acceptance that we get to as an adult, right? After a while, we kind of accept the fact that, okay, well, I'm not this or I'm not that, or somebody's told me enough times that that I'm not a good musician or whatever the case might be, that we start to just let those things go. With kids, it's interesting, especially when you get them at an age to where they're still confident enough to want to give something a try. And how cool it is to see that when, some of these sports, I've coached soccer, I've coached baseball, and I had a little guy one time, one of Tyler's teams, that he would come to baseball practice, and he was dressed to the part. I mean, he had everything. If nothing else, he was going to look like a baseball player. And it was quite funny because after a while, it was his skills were not quite there yet. Doesn't mean that they weren't going to get there, but they just weren't quite there yet. And I remember we worked with him constantly, all season long, throughout the summer, because he had never gotten a hit. And the frustration starts to set in, the discouragement starts to set in. Sound familiar? We've been there, right? And I remember one time he finally was able to dribble a ball down. They missed it, and I think he got to first base. The beaming smile on that child's face was just absolutely incredible. I mean, it's one of those things. That's why you do what you do, especially if you're coaching. It's the fact that, you know what, you are important. You are an important part of this team, or in this case, everyone's an important part of this congregation. Okay, so if you're an important part of the congregation, if you're an important part, and we need everybody doing things, then what about doing our part? Is it something to where we want to sit back and say, again, confidence gets in the way, right? I'm going to sit back and I'm going to let these guys do it because they look really good at that, or they're naturally talented here. I see that, especially on a soccer field, all the time. I see the kids like, I'm afraid that if I make this move, I'm probably going to do something wrong, or whatever the case might be. But do we need to do our part? So I will need help again. Let's go to James chapter 1, 19 through 25. What's that? You got it? Okay. We'll get you next one there.
My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that is so prevalent and humbly accepted. The word planted in you, which can save you. Do not merely listen to the world and deceive yourself to what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says, it's like someone who looks at his face in the mirror and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But whoever intentionally into the perfect law gives freedom and continues in it, not forgetting what they have been heard, but by doing it, they will be blessed in what they do.
Excellent. So right there, James is telling us that the Bible, the Scripture, God's Word has actually given us some of these instructions, right? It's given us a pathway. It's given us a guidebook on different things. But how often do we get into a situation to where, again, confidence, just that lack of faith to a degree. I mean, quite frankly, it's what it comes out to be, right? That we're not ready to move forward. So now we've been told, yes, we need leaders. We need people who will follow those leaders and become leaders in that process. And we need to do it as a team. We need to do it collectively together. But, again, does that mean that we just, okay, I'm going to let so-and-so do this because I'm afraid? No, it's saying right there in James that we need to look and see. When we recognize those things, that we have to become a part of it. That we have to do our part, essentially. Okay, if we've chosen to become a part of it, if we've passed that step, then now it's time to do our part. So, again, I'm going to relate this to my soccer analogies. I should have just put a soccer ball up there. Sorry. So every season that I coach, doesn't matter what age group, obviously at the beginning of the season, it's, we've got some players that might be familiar with one another. We've got some players that aren't. And usually there's a situation to where after a while, sometimes they start getting to know each other well enough that they just come together. They come together, and again, now all those parts are working. And I'm constantly preaching to them. That's why I'm preaching today, because I preach at practice all the time. I'm constantly preaching to them that we need to make sure everyone's included, that we need to work together as a team, and that everyone is on the same level here. I don't care what your physical assets are. You are still at the same level here because no one, especially when you're playing soccer and people on a field, can go through and beat 11 other people by themselves. Okay? It just doesn't happen. So everybody doing your part. Just yesterday I was preaching this to Tyler's team, a bunch of teenagers, and they picked up on it. They got it. They figured it out that everybody needs to do their part, and everybody did their part. They had good success because of it. Sometimes it takes a little longer. Sometimes that confidence is not quite there, so you try a different tactic. And that's what makes life interesting, is that how do we make sure that everybody is valued enough and that everyone is actually committed enough then to, once they realize that they're valued, to actually take that step. Larry mentioned it too. I think that was absolutely perfect. When do you take that step to say, you know what? I'm not doing this just out of compliance whenever I say yes. I'm doing this because my heart feels like I need to stretch myself and take that step. Okay, so what step is it that's in your life right now that you need to take? What step is it that's going to make you part of that team and actually that important part of that team that the Bible just told us is sometimes we think it's the lesser one, but actually we're going to raise it up a little bit. Okay? Don't worry, I'm getting there. Okay, so we've gone into leadership. We need some leadership for this team, for this congregation. We need teamwork, people to do to come together, and then we need everyone to do their part, to do their role, whatever that might be. And then finally, and we've heard it here just this morning, of discouragement. I've had ups and downs. I've been struggling with this. Okay? How do we finish the race? How do we get through those tough times? Because if you've ever followed sports, you see the ups and downs, right? If you've ever followed life, you see the ups and downs. They exist all the time. So how do we get through those? Well, you know, amazing thing about this this word that God gave us, there's an answer in there. And so I'm going to ask, I think we've got about three, four of these actually. First one's Timothy chapter 4, verse 7 to 8. And make sure it's back on the front. Thank you. And hold on just a second. The next one, if you want to start looking that up, Isaiah chapter 40, 28 to 31. And then Galatians chapter 6, verse 9. And then finally, we're going back to James chapter 1 again, verses 1 through 12. Okay? And while you're looking those up, Janelle, if you'd start, that'd be great.
I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. And now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing.
Excellent. Thank you. Anybody have Isaiah 40? Thanks, Wayne.
Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint.
And anyone with Galatians? Let me go back here for a second.
Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap the harvest if we do not give up.
And then finally, we're back to James. Anybody have James? Chapter 1, verses 1 through 12. Okay, I'll do James. So James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes scattered among the nations, greetings. Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do. Believers in humble circumstances ought to take pride in their high position, but the rich should take pride in their humiliation, since they will pass away like a wild flower. For the sun rises with scorching heat and withers the plant. Its blossom falls, and its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich will fade away even while they go about their business. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. So what's James saying there? Don't give up. Don't give up. We've got, how many times have you heard Jesus never said this Christian life is going to be easy? Life in general in this world, no matter what's going to be easy. There's no perfect formula, so to speak, and it's going to be different for everyone. But the goal is still not to give up. There is a prize. There is the trophy at the end to be able to make it through there. I want to go back for just a second, this whole kind of tying all this together, teamwork, not giving up, and the fact of doing your part and also having that confidence. I coach, maybe it's the right word, I don't know, two teams in soccer right now. One of them is 12 and under, so it's basically 10, 11-year-olds, and then my other one goes up to, you know, 13 to 18. And the funny thing about it is, so one of my younger kids is autistic. And his father came to me the very first practice, and he said he is he's high-level autistic. He's never played sports before, but he really wants to give this a try. And he was kind of concerned. Yeah, I could tell the look on his face of, you know, did we do the right thing? Or probably, what's this coach, how's this coach going to respond? I was like, great. I love this. You know, he kind of looked at me a little bit puzzled. It's like, I love kids that have never played before. It's sometimes you're trying to get them over that shyness, but I've had a number of those kids who just absolutely come out, and once they get past that part, they're just tearing it up, you know, and it's fun to watch them come out of that show. But especially I've had kids with disabilities, and again, it's fun to see them use a game for what the game was created for, to start to give themselves confidence, to give themselves a goal. And so this little guy, he is nothing but a ball of energy. And he's a lot of fun. And he came to me the last game, towards the end of the game. And most of the time, I've played him out in the field, just to kind of get him some experience and get him comfortable. And he came and he's like, "Coach, can I be goalkeeper?" And I was like, "Well, that's, you know, it's a challenging position. I don't care what age, because all of a sudden, you know, it's kind of like everything else. Who is the one that they gets, you know, the proverbial egg on the face if the ball goes into the net? Well, the goalkeeper didn't catch it. Well, I always say it's because 10 other people let the ball go past. But he wanted to do this. It's like, all right, okay, you know what? You're going to be, we'll make sure that we do this. So here was kind of the interesting dynamic. And this is where this group, We're still working on how they come together, how they see their roles, but also how they see the roles of one another. Because he's back there, he's playing, and there's kind of moments to where you can kind of see, it's like, oh, why is he there, you know? And he didn't have experience or you know, maybe this athleticism. But there was one point where he finally got a save. He stopped the ball from going in. There was a couple that got past him, right? And again, I was telling the other kids that, hey, just because he got past him wasn't mean it's his fault. He got past everybody. But he got it. And the beam, the look on his face, looking over at his parents' face and seeing that opportunity for him and that confidence that built up. And this little guy, I can tell you this. I mean, he tells me, "Coach, I went and I watched YouTube videos. I mean, keeper's supposed to be doing this." I mean, he's buying into it. He is buying into it. That's what this is supposed to be about. Okay, that's what I am making all these analogies to sports, but that's in our life too. There's a lot of things we don't challenge ourselves to. You know what? If you don't challenge yourself to something and you're kind of a little concerned about it, go watch kids. Go watch kids. You'll have a youthful heart about things and get past the idea that I'm an adult. I don't want to be embarrassed. I'm up here preaching, believe me. All right. So I'm going to finish up with a couple of things here, hopefully drive home this point. Again, there are opportunities for us to see. We've Dave and I talked about this a little bit. We've actually talked about this quite a bit over the last few months, but even just last week is, I don't think it's been a surprise as you have seen him give his messages on the fact that he wants us to recognize we are not in the same place we were a year ago, okay? We're moving forward. We're coming together. We have people doing their parts, okay? We have people continuing to start to engage and follow, and Dave, this is for you on record, the crazy shirtless dancing guy up there, because we're starting to see that, hey, we can buy into this. We can buy into this fact because this brings us closer together as family. There's a couple of quotes, one in particular. Anybody familiar with John Wooden? So incredibly famous basketball coach. If you follow basketball, I grew up in Indiana, right? And John Wooden was like a legend. Of course, he's from Indiana, so that's probably something to do with it. But I grew up in a small town, Indiana, graduated from Purdue University. Another relationship, I guess. If you look through anything in college basketball in particular, he's an absolute legend, simply because of obviously winning championships. But if you actually look at his life and his career deeper, he didn't base his life on how many championships he won. He has actually several devotionals that or like daily Bible studies that you can go get, and those are quite interesting to hear, especially from his perspective. But when asked about his faith, here's what John Wooden said: "I have always tried to make it clear that basketball is not the ultimate. It is of small importance in comparison to the total life we live. There's only one kind of life that truly wins, and that is the one that places faith in the hands of the Savior." Okay? Again, relying on that faith. Everything else we can get caught up in, absolutely. But when we come back to that core faith and bring everybody together in that core faith, then we move forward. And then finally, any Jazz fans? Pray for him today. Really? I don't know if you followed this, but I absolutely love it, again, from a coaching perspective and just from a life perspective. Quinn Snyder's been telling this team, the strength of the team is the team, right? The strength of the team is the team. The strength of our congregation is our congregation. It cannot be 2-3 people. It has to be everyone. The strength of the congregation is the congregation. We can have leadership, we can have leaders, but everybody has to fall in and be willing to do a part. So, with that, again, we've had many ups and downs. We've watched some of our friends leave, go to other churches. Sometimes we're not the same look we used to have, and sometimes it's difficult because we kind of like that history, right, those memories. But it is what it is. We're not there anymore. But we have persevered. As Dave says, we're not closing the doors. You know, a year and a half ago, I wasn't quite sure if that was going to be true. But I'm glad to see that change that we have. Oh, just a second. And then ultimately this comes down to keeping that hope. We're developing hope. We're a far more hopeful congregation now than just a few months ago. The energy that we see coming in. All right, that is what other people are going to notice. That's what other people are going to follow you into the door because of the hope that you share, the hope that you see. And then finally, as we go through all of this, we follow that leadership. We become leaders. We do our part, and we finish the race. Hopefully at the end, we can hear those words. From Matthew 25:21, his master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share the master's happiness." JC, you had a comment. We're going to finish off. I haven't done an offering, so let's go ahead and do that. Make sure I'm not missing something. Yeah. Okay.